Bonjour, Dan.
We're back. It's been, it's been 1 week for the listeners, but it's been like, what, 3 weeks for us?
Feels like more, but yeah, it's three.
A little bit. It was, honestly, we should maybe try and do that preloading a couple episodes and taking a little time in between, because that was kind of fun. It's kind of enjoyable to not have to do this. I mean, not that I don't enjoy these conversations, but like, you know, the regularity of it all.
Oh, well, you should always try to be regular, Dan. It's good for your health.
Well, that's more coffee-based than it is podcast-based.
Oh.
We're off to a better start already.
Yeah.
I hope I don't sound terrible. I was shouting at college students for about 5 hours today. So my voice is a little scratchy.
Yeah, I was going to say you sounded a little like ill or under the weather, as they say.
No, it's just as their attention wanes, I start talking louder because I have to talk over them to register that I am speaking, and then they stop and then listen, and then I can talk normal again. But, like 3 hours into the 5 hour class, it doesn't work out so well. So I just end up kind of shouting in their general direction for a while. So little radio voicey.
No, not radio voicey. You just sound sick.
Well, I'm not sick. I'm just sick of these kids. I don't know.
Oh, Dan, what if they found out you had a podcast and they listened to this episode and they're like, oh no, my favorite teacher doesn't like us.
I'm not their favorite teacher. That, you know, I don't think they put that much work into it, but they did Google me, I think, on day one, and they were like, what's this goofy picture of you on Google Images? So that was fun. I had to explain a variety of the images that show up on Google Images when you search my name.
Well, whose fault is that, really?
I blame Google and the cloud. It's always the cloud's fault.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, the cloud takes such terrible photos of you, really.
Before we get into some new news, I do have a little bit of follow-up from last week's episode, which is technically 3 weeks ago. In the last episode that came out, I had hoped that by the time the episode came out, I would have a new trash can and my tree would be removed from my backyard. Turns out the tree was removed the very next day. They woke me up bright and early to get that out of my yard for me. I didn't even have to call anyone. It was very nice of them. And not only did I get one additional replacement trash can, I got two because our city is apparently terrible at planning things. So I have two new empty trash cans, which is, you know, it's nice. It's better than zero.
Yeah. Yes.
Just figured I'd get that follow-up on the record, since if I didn't say it now, I'd probably forget about it. And I'm sure the listeners were dying to know how the tale of Dan's broken tree and melted trash can was going to end.
What a thrilling conclusion.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Speaking of thrilling conclusions, how was your trip?
I think I'm tired from the trip. And
you're not certain?
Well, it all happened so fast. I mean, it was a long time. It felt like a long time that I was away. But then sort of had to hit the ground running, as they say. And so little blurry. Cuz on Monday, woke up at 5 a.m. Paris time, which I think is like, I don't know, still the previous day here. And then yeah. I arrived 9 p.m. Los Angeles time. So that was, I don't know, I think I was awake for like 20 hours or something, with like a couple like 30-minute naps in there on planes.
It's the glory of international travel. It always works out that way.
Yeah. And you know, you got border control in France, which is not fun. And you've got security lines, also not fun, because they like us, enjoy understaffing things. And then you get to go here to our customs, where there's just the United States flags everywhere, and everything's really slow.
In case you forgot where you were.
Yeah, and for some reason they have some sort of like no phone, no device policy thing, and
no photos. I remember those signs.
Yeah, and I was just like, for what reason exactly? It's like, it can't be to record how this process works or something, because someone could recite how this process works. It's not really that complicated. So then what is the point? Is it just so there are no embarrassing photos of someone being mistreated or really long lines or something like that? Like, I don't understand what the objection is. But that was annoying because I was just stuck in a long line and I couldn't take out my phone to look at Twitter. So that was like all I wanted to do, just the itchy Twitter finger. But the that whole process was not amazing. And then I finally got here, went to sleep, and promptly woke up 5 in the morning every single day since I've been back. And
that's good. You get a nice early start to your day. You got time to sort of relax and stretch before you go to work.
Yeah, and I tried to stay up so that I would fall asleep and stay asleep, you know, for the whole night. You know, so that way that would work in my favor. Because then I would be tired enough that I wouldn't wake up. Unfortunately, that has not worked. So I've just had less sleep. So
you've just been intentionally depriving yourself of extra sleep.
Yeah. And working 2 10-hour days so far. And just like various things have gone wrong in my life since I've been back for things malfunctioning that need to be taken care of.
So basically, you're missing the vacation after the vacation that allows you to relax and reset and get back into the fun, not at all chaotic world of Los Angeles.
I need to budget time in the future so that I have like a day or two of settle back in time, because this is not acceptable. It's unacceptable.
I'm sorry to hear that, but, you know, the bit in between the international travel, I hope that was, full of delightful food and, interesting cities and pretty views and all that.
What was full of previews?
The part where you were actually in France. I hope that part was better than the traveling part.
Oh, that was confusing. that was okay. And
what time is it in France right now?
I'm not sure. It's the same time it is in Slovenia. I know that. Did you know that?
I did not, but I have an app that would tell me that.
So do I, because I have Ljubljana. Ljubljana. I can't say it. That's, you know, that one. That city where
and you were making fun of Casey for his inability to pronounce a French word.
It's Hermes. I don't understand how he's never heard that before. But so it's 6:45 a.m. there.
In my best American accent, it's Ljubljana.
Okay.
I don't think you pronounce the J.
The J is silent.
The J is silent.
Unlike this podcast. And it's 5:45 in London.
This is a time zone talk with Joe.
Yeah, and speaking of London, I met Mike there very briefly and had a coffee with him.
He was similarly tall based on that photo.
Yeah, I mean, about the same, and only like the beard. The beard was
was it intimidating?
It was, because it was also a little grisly, because he was going to get it cut.
that was pre his XOXO trim, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's very spiffy and you know, dapper right now, but then it was just like a little much, as he's detailed. And unfortunately, everyone on the internet decided to tell him that, and so I was CC'd on every single person talking to him about his beard for the rest of the day. It's just sort of fascinating. It's just like I people really have opinions.
Isn't the internet a magical place?
Yeah, people can share opinions about things. who doesn't like opinions?
Let's not. So Mike was nice then. It was good to do that and meet him. Was it weirder or less weird than meeting me?
Different weird, because Mike's sort of intimidating because I wanted him to respect me, and then with you...
You don't care if I respect you or not? Is that how that is?
No, I kind of take you for granted. Like, whatever it is, you're going to still be here.
Oh.
You're old, dependable Dan. We've settled.
I demand a raise.
Okay.
Oh dear. I put hats on you guys. That was fun. I haven't done that in a while.
Yes.
I thought it warranted it.
It didn't. But that was interesting.
I had to do a little bit of a background extension because you guys cropped it so tight to the top of your heads that I had to extend the background so I had room for tall hats.
Mm. Well, fortunately, you were able to use some sort of advanced device to do that, maybe like a computer or something.
Yeah, it all happens on the computer these days.
Mm-hmm. You push the button, extend background.
Sure, just like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a grid warp, though.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. I like the grid warp for background extensions. Works out well.
Okay, not a spline warp. Yeah.
No, not a spline warp. I only use the spline warp. Well, I did use the spline warp on the brim of the hat because it was at the wrong angle. It was coming down into Mike's face, so I had to spline warp back up a little bit.
Ah, okay.
The worst part was I did that in like 5 minutes before we were going to shoot for a project I was working on, and somebody came in and sat down next to me, and they were like, oh, hey, you're the VFX soup guy. Yeah, nice to meet you. I looked over my shoulder, and I'm like putting hats on you and Mike, and I'm like, oh, hi. Yeah, this is just an inside joke about a thing I do. I put hats on this guy on the internet. He's like, oh, that's interesting. And he just kind of walked away, went and got some coffee.
You probably didn't even need to explain it. I think that's one of those cases where you're just sort of like drawing more attention to it.
No, he was sitting next to me looking at the screen because I think he thought I had like some sort of fancy visual effects thing going on there and he wanted to check out what was going on. It's like, no, it was just awkward silence because I'm rotoing out little hats and moving them around on people's faces.
Mm. So you're not going to do a VFX breakdown for him, and you know, do like a 3D fly through,
the
layers split out on the sides.
I did explain mirror ball, unwrapping and creating the sphere in a 3D environment like 8 times to people, you know, because every time there was a new person on set who I hadn't talked to yet, they'd wander over and look at my little mirror ball and go, "So what's this thing all about?" And I'd go, "Oh, just look at my screen here. We cut it out and then unwrap it and then rewrap it and then it's a sphere now and stuff."
Mm.
So I did a lot of that, and then I put some green stuff on some stuff.
Ah, I hear that's good for the things.
Yeah, green screen is what makes magic. Somebody actually did walk up and say, "Is this where the magic happens?" And I was a little uncomfortable, but I think I knew what they meant.
Well, was there a mattress on set or anything? Or?
No, a couple couches. It was just, you know, there was couches and little fold-out plastic tables where we were working.
Okay, well, I mean, the couch was probably sturdy enough, but...
Sure, you get the mirror ball, you get the couch, that's all... requisite material. This is getting off on a weird tangent. Anyway.
Very weird. Okay.
Hats.
Yeah.
So after the hats, ex post hatto.
Okay. and that was the hotel room that had two stories, which I'd never been in one of those before. It was mildly annoying because I would go up the stairs and then I would forget something downstairs and I would have to go downstairs. It's been a while since I've experienced that.
Oh, my hotel room is so large. I can't remember where I put my things.
Yeah, but the funny thing is the hotel rooms kept shrinking for the duration of my travels. So we checked out of there and went to Paris. And for anyone who's not familiar with hotel rooms in Paris, they're like little shoeboxes where there's a bed. And then kind of a bathroom tacked onto the side of it. This is a little bigger than the last time I was in Paris, where the you could touch the wall of the shower on either side with like your elbows if you just sort of slightly move them a little bit. Like you couldn't even like put your arms to the side or anything. And it was a mess. This one was a little better than that. Then after that, we went down to St. John Cap Ferrat, which is a little peninsula off the bottom of the Côte d'Azur, it's near Nice, it was kind of a sleepy little harbor town with some beautiful water and beaches full of pebbles, which I did not find enticing, but many Europeans seem to enjoy them.
Well, we know you're not a beach person in general, so.
No, I'm not. Especially not when it's just like, here's some pebbles with some cigarette butts in it. And it's just like, yeah, that kind of takes some of the majesty out of these these clear blue waters.
I think that's French potpourri. It's just pebbles and cigarette butts.
Oh God. The smoking in Europe is out of control. And even though you can't smoke inside, everyone smokes like an inch outside and all of the windows and doors are open. You're just like, yeah. So do you guys not know how like breezes and like air and that kind of stuff works? Like, I don't know. You know, here there's, you know, those regulations where it's like, you must be 5,000 feet away from the nearest person, before you can do that. And it's just like, I love that. That is great. Let's make sure that happens everywhere on Earth.
Well, it's actually only 10 feet, but, yeah, people usually move a little further away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, they got to use the metric system over there. So the,
it's like 5 fathoms. Or something.
I don't think that's how that works. But the it was fine. And then to the Luberon, which is in Provence, but further inland from Nice, so it was like the country. And then Châteauneuf-du-Pape, where we didn't actually stay, but went on a wine tour. And I just like saying Châteauneuf-du-Pape. So that's Newcastle of the Pope, by the way.
Oh, well,
that's what that means.
Huh.
Because there was a pope.
I didn't know. There was a pope in France?
Well, yeah, for a while. Because the pope was all like, hey, you know, Rome keeps getting sacked, so I don't think I want to stick around here. So let's go move the papacy over to Avignon. And then I need a summer house because I can't actually stay it. I can't stay in my summer house, so I'm going to set up a little fortification over here in this little town, and we'll call it Châteauneuf-du-Pape. Although I don't think he actually called it that; they just called it that later. But yeah, there's just wine and stuff, and it's a tiny town, and like everything is just like there are like grapes growing on these tiny little plots of land, like in between buildings in the little town center, and you're just like that is interesting, and it's because the land is worth so much money for growing grapes that it's used almost exclusively for that. So it was peculiar. And then back up to Paris on a horrible train ride. And then...
what was wrong with the train ride?
I enjoy the fact that France has a really good rail system, and that you can take a rail pretty much anywhere, and there are high-speed rails and there are little commuter rails and all kinds of stuff in between.
Is it a hypertube?
No, there is nothing hyper about it. And the particular train we were on to go back up to Paris, we splurged and got the first class. And having been on second class several times, I will tell you, there is almost no difference. Virtually
Wait,
none.
You didn't get one of those little private close your door and hang out by yourself rooms?
No. I was expecting like mystery on the Orient Express or something, but like nothing. Nothing.
Well, it's not the Orient Express. You were in France, so.
Well, no, but like that. That's why I said like that. That's a simile, Dan. I know you're big on the metaphors, but.
See, you've been gone for so long, I've just completely forgot the difference between metaphors, similes, and that other thing I was talking about.
What was the other thing?
I don't know. I don't even remember the name for it. It's just gone now.
Analogies?
Sure. Let's go with that.
Okay, I don't know. and there was the conclusion of the experience.
Was the train bad because what was it like? Where you pay for like the extra 2 inches of legroom on a Southwest flight or something, where you just like had slightly more roomy chair, or was it just literally no different?
No, it was literally no different from second class. In fact, the whole first class car was full. So when we got on, and it wasn't the first stop, so when we got on, almost all of the luggage area was taken, and we had our big suitcases for spending 2 weeks in France. So there was one little available slot all the way at the back of the cabin, which is, you know, sort of like the front of the cabin, I guess, because it's the first car, but you go walk the whole way back through the tiny little aisle with the giant suitcase and then wedge it in between some things. And you got to wait for everybody to get off the train before you can go get yours and then get off. So it was, I'm not going to highly recommend that. And there's no one coming around with like little snacks or anything. Nothing. I was disappointed.
So, should we just do like a count of how many different ways you looked like a ridiculous American tourist?
You can count it, but I don't see why not. I mean, just assume it was a constant.
I'm just picturing you lugging this gigantic bag onto the train and everyone's staring at you while you're trying to find a place to wedge it in.
Yeah, yeah, that happened. And then a French guy kindly said to me in English, because I think he could tell I was not from around there, said that there was that spot in the back that I could use to put the stuff in. So that's what I did.
Well, thank you, random French guy.
Mm-hmm. The French people are very nice. They get a bad rap, I think, for being impolite and difficult. But, you know, they're really great, except for when you want to get your check, l'addition, s'il vous plaît, because then they will take 50 years, and you'll just be sitting there at the table, and time's a-wasting.
I think that's kind of a Europe thing in general.
I know, it drives me crazy. Every single time I go to Europe, it's just like, if this was an American restaurant, like, you would still, your food might not even be at your table yet, and you would already have the bill, you know, for everything. Just be like, okay, no rush, but go whenever you're ready, you know, that sort of thing.
They put it face down and sort of slide it underneath your drink or something.
Yeah, or the little cup thing off to the side. And so, like, they really want to move you out of there as fast as possible. And then in Europe, it's just like, nope, don't care. We don't have anybody coming for a while.
Where else would you possibly need to be? What else would you possibly want to do other than hang out at this restaurant and eat some food and drink?
Yeah, but you're not even eating food and drinking at that point, because that's after the service has basically ended, after you've had your meal. Then there's this long period where they have you sit for, like, I don't know, 10 minutes, and then they ask if you want dessert. And then you look at the dessert menu, pick something. They bring it out in a couple minutes, really, really, you know, pretty quickly, actually. And then you have your dessert, and then, like, 10 minutes after that, they'll come out, and they'll be like, do you want any coffee? And then, because you can't get coffee and dessert, you get dessert and then you get coffee. And then after that, you just wait there indefinitely. Because it takes you almost no time to have a tiny little espresso. And then you just keep asking, and you're just trying to be very polite, and you're just like, oh, please. Yeah.
Why do you go places?
I don't know. I'm really terrible. I'm sure I infuriated everybody around me. But it must be like, oh, what an impatient American tourist.
I'm glad you had a little bit of fun in spite of the Europeanness of it all getting in the way.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk about all the things that happened while you were gone?
I am dying to talk about the Apple TV.
All right, we can get there.
Is
that where you want to start? Is that where you want to start?
Yeah, I mean, where else is there to start? What else happened on this list?
Automatic Duck. It came back out again. Probably not a fan of Automatic Duck, are you?
What in the world is Automatic Duck?
it's a software product that used to exist a long time ago and got bought by Adobe, and now is back again. It's a way of taking timelines from Final Cut or Premiere or something, and then dumping them into After Effects, and then vice versa, because historically they didn't have the ability to do that. It's a useful tool. I enjoy it, and it's back again. Red Giant is selling it.
Okay. So, again, Apple TV.
Sure, sure, sure.
Yeah. Was there anything else as exciting as that to share with the audience?
You know, there's the iPhones and the iPads and Technicolor buying the mill, but other than that, that's all I got on the list.
Nah. Oh, well, I mean, the Technicolor buying the mill is only interesting if you know anything about the mill or Technicolor.
I mean, $300 million for a visual effects studio is actually pretty interesting. Yeah. Especially considering I didn't realize they own so many other studios. They own MPC, Mr. X, and I don't know who Mirkros Image is.
They do, I think, Game of Thrones stuff. And I think they're somewhere in Europe. I can't remember.
Mr. X is in Canada, right?
Yeah, Toronto. And they bought them last year, I think. And MPC they've owned for a while. Technicolor, I can't remember the exact structure, but I think Tim Sarnoff runs the whole thing. And Tim Sarnoff used to be in charge of Sony Pictures Imageworks before they canned him because they wanted to make it into a really profitable thing. So they hired over from the main lot some other guy. I will not say anything impolite, but I would just like to point out that NPC seems to be doing pretty well for themselves these days, and maybe that's okay. So the but Technicolor owns a lot of things, and another interesting thing about Technicolor this week is that I also realized that Sony has picked Dolby over Technicolor's solution for the HDR remastering stuff. So there's that feud slowly boiling over different kinds of brightness contrast things.
All the format feuds is great.
Yeah, good stuff. But that's the short of it. And then let's get right into the meat of it. Let's talk about the Apple TV, Dan.
All right, let's get right to your baby and talk about the new Apple TV. It exists. You were pretty much right that it is a faster, less crappy box that does more or less the same thing, right?
Well, no, I mean that's not specifically what I said.
Well, as opposed to something that would completely sort of revolutionize the broadcast industry, they've done something that seems like a step in the right direction, but it is not the completely holistic world-ending solution that everyone was waiting for.
Oh yeah, well, Variety wrote up that it was not going to succeed because the OTT service wasn't, the over-the-top service wasn't ready, and like that spelled doom. And I still think that that's not correct, that this is the way to go, because they can't get an OTT service together, that this at least gives them leverage to get an OTT service by putting boxes into the hands of people and getting some kind of streaming support for different video services on the device. And then later on, they can add the service. What I find baffling beyond all belief is that they're still selling the old box with no update. At all. And I didn't think it was going to have like fancy whiz-bang apps or anything, but I was just like, so you didn't even like skin it to look like the other one? It's not, you know, updated to do anything, and you're confusingly referring to them as Apple TV and the new Apple TV. One of them has a set of different storage tiers too. Like, okay, that's weird, guys. I don't know why you're doing that.
Well, when you say this gives them leverage for the over-the-top service with regard to putting boxes in people's houses, what is the value proposition for this new one?
The value proposition...
Why would people buy this? The people that didn't buy the previous one, why would they buy this one?
Apps? There's no immediate reason for somebody who didn't already own one. I think that this is going to be a huge upgrade for people who had one, who will buy one. And another strike against it...
When you say huge upgrade, do you mean simply it provides us the feature of universal search that we've been, like, punching ourselves in the face about for a really long time because we just really wanted that? Like, what is the huge upgrade? I mean, I look at this and I see it's nice and flashy, and they've done a lot of integration, and they've made a lot of UI enhancements, and we've got a new remote and all that stuff. But what is really the thing about this that is that interesting, or should be interesting to people?
Well, it's the third party apps, so you can get whatever somebody makes. And when I say whatever, I mean whether that is a media solution, like some sort of a streaming thing, either some cable network or broadcast network or whatever that provides their own application, or if it's a special kind of delivery service like Netflix or something where they provide that, or if it's like some sort of a gaming thing. Although I don't really think gaming is a big selling point of the device, and I'll get into that later. But just based on the streaming stuff, this also opens up the possibility that you can have Amazon on the device if Amazon decides to make an app. It puts the ball in their court. It's possible that they would. They make, you know, Kindle apps for every Apple device. They have different kinds of Amazon apps for things. So it is conceivable that it will happen. But
technically conceivable that they could have done that beforehand. I'm sure Apple would have kind of welcomed Prime content on there before. Amazon was resistant because they've got their own doodad. But
we don't know what happened with that. We don't know if they were ever invited onto the platform, if they asked to be on the app platform, or if they were both too proud and they were just sitting across the punch bowl looking at each other. This at least takes the ambiguity out of it, since it's firmly saying, hey, you can develop this thing, make whatever the thing is. Now, Amazon might still avoid doing that because they would like to push their own Fire TV solution. But they do have some interest in being on multiple devices.
Hmm. I guess the idea is, I'm not sure how open Amazon's platform is the idea that technically anyone could write that Amazon app if they could hook into the APIs, right?
No, that's not the idea. Amazon would write it.
Right, of course. But, you know, you could, you can write an app that accesses whatever sort of content you want, provided you have the ability, right?
Well, Amazon can write their own app for the Apple TV and then submit it to be reviewed, just like if it was an iOS device. And so, like, they have a Prime Video app for iOS, so they can theoretically do somewhat similar thing there. Now, there is a somewhat of a hurdle in that we have not seen a lot about the specifics of the IAP in-app purchase stuff. And Amazon is, of course, always reticent to actually participate in any of that with Apple. So that might also be another reason why you might never see one if they suddenly decide that this is not even worth it because they can't have a storefront on the device at all. Because remember, this doesn't have a web browser. So if you want to buy anything, you have to do it on another device. You can't do it on your phone. Although that's not really that big of a hurdle. You know, almost everybody has like a phone or something they could purchase it on, but it is weird. One of the things that I really don't understand is the how should I say this? The parallax interface thing? Like, what the F?
You mean where the icons wobble around a little bit to follow your finger?
Yeah, why?
I think, if anything, it's just an indication of which icon is currently selected. You have the ability to sort of just wobble it so you can see which one you're on without changing icons.
You know what else does that? A glowing border, changing the hue.
Yeah, but you know, if it's a small TV, maybe you can't see the glow. I don't know.
Why would it be? Dan,
it's the magic of direct manipulation. It's why the iPad is so wonderful. You're literally touching the internet.
Dan, this I do not. It makes me angry. Just things that needlessly animate for no reason.
It doesn't animate for no reason. It only animates if you move it around with your finger.
I know, but your finger is going to be moving across the surface, so it will always move, unless you are somehow specifically like tapping every little thing in such a perfect way that nothing ever tilts.
based on the little interface video, it looked like you had to sort of like move your finger around in a circle, so I don't think you're going to do that accidentally. But who knows? I mean, it's it's a little piece of flair or something.
I don't approve of it. I find it distracting and weird. And I think it comes from the same genius that put parallax in the phone.
I still enjoy my phone parallax.
No, I turn it off. Burn it with fire.
You're no fun.
It doesn't even parallax the right way, as Dr. Drang detailed extensively
that's only the control center.
I don't appreciate it. So anyway, thank goodness they spent delicate, desperate, hard to get programming cycles on making that happen.
So that's the other thing. Tim on stage mentioned, you know, we've been working really hard for a really long time on this thing. What were they working on, you think? What was the hard part of this?
Oh, I am 100% sure that this was tied up with trying to get the OTT service off the ground.
Think this is like a 50% solution that they just released because they're tired of waiting for 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, like, back in, what was it, March, when there were the rumors that they were going to have it at that event, and then they didn't have it, and then I was just like, screw it, just launch something anyway. And then when it was like when it was WWDC and the rumors were again that they weren't going to have it, and it was just like, please, for the love of God, just launch the thing. And then, you know, that can be leveraged to do some other thing. So that's what I think was holding this up. I don't think it was them spending the time to do the parallax icons that was holding this up for what, 3.5, 4 years. That was not it. The attention.
It's hard to see within the device itself the engineering resources over the course of 3 years. And maybe obviously it's not going to be a full time team because they're working on other stuff. And especially now that everything is a little bit more connected to iOS, because I believe the case is now that the universal apps will work on all devices if they're written that way.
Yeah. Well, before the way originally. The first Apple TV used a modified version of OS X, where it was basically like Front Row, sort of. And then the sequential versions of Apple TV used a version of iOS where what you saw in the interface was sort of like an application that had things added into the application, rather than a directory of other applications. So it was weird. And that was a hacky way to do it, and it was like that forever. And it's still like that on the new device that you can buy right now in stores, $69. So, anyway.
It's only $69. Who cares? It's disposable at this point.
I just don't think it leads to good customer sat. I think that this is bad customer sat.
Oh, I know you're so concerned about their customer set.
I'm very concerned about the customer set.
I like the old box. I think I'm going to keep the old box when the new one comes out and just put it in the other room attached to a TV that doesn't have like regular TV.
Yeah, and you know why you're going to do that? Because it costs $150 to $200 to buy a new box. So you're not going to go adding them to every TV in your house.
I just mean I'm not going to throw the old one out because it's still useful.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how else are you going to not watch what you rented on your phone on your TV?
We're past that.
No, we're not. It remains to be seen. I want to have the next generation Apple TV, the new Apple TV, as they say, in my hands, so I can plug it into my TV, so I can rent something on my phone, and then watch it not update on my TV. I just want to see if that happens.
Williams is getting one, so we'll bug him, right?
Yes.
Didn't we see that?
Yes, yes. He said he's getting parentheses one, close parentheses, Apple TV test units.
I know the general vicinity of the city he lives in, so I'll track him down and we'll find out for sure.
Okay. You know the vicinity of the city?
Yeah, yeah. It's far away.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. So anyway, that's good that it's there, and I don't know why it took so long, and everything that's there is kind of what people have been arguing for. The Siri thing strikes me as weird. I really want to see it in practice because I have a lot of doubts, and I know that they demonstrated some things that people would think would normally be tricky that would trip it up. However, I can anticipate a lot of things that would also trip it up. Especially when it concerns proper nouns and things that might be foreign words. I don't know if you've ever tried to say something that included foreign words or like street names that were in Spanish to Siri, but doesn't always go well.
No, not so much.
Yeah, so I want to see how that works because I can see the possibility for problems. I do like that there's the filtering, but again, I want to see how that works because the example that they had with the Sean Connery Bond films, that's good. I like that. However, what if I say, okay, I want to watch Star Trek and I want to watch season one or something like that? Like, how fine-tuned can we finesse all of these things and just be like, okay, show me all of the season ones of all of the Star Treks, or show me all the season finales of every Star Trek. Like, will it do that, or will it understand that that is even a grouping? Does it have to be by show? And be like, okay, well, do Star Trek Next Generation. Now show me, like, it would be kind of a useless thing to be like, show me all the ones with Patrick Stewart in them. Like, that's who can say exactly how that'll break down? But and also, I don't know how extensive their database is. Like, if it's going to have, like, guest stars for things, that'll be interesting.
And yeah, they demoed that one, the Modern Family episode with who was the guest in that one. That was part of the demo.
Yeah, but that was a current episode of Modern Family. But what if I'm using the Universal Search for an old episode of Star Trek, and I want to get the result from Netflix?
You want to find the Joe Piscopo episode really quickly?
Yes, that's a great example, Dan. So I want to find the episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation that had Joe Piscopo in it. And I would like to see if that works flawlessly, smoothly, first time. Since that's not a current thing.
I mean, there is a database of this stuff. We use it all the time. It's IMDb. I presume they could use some of that data.
Well, I don't know if they have a deal with IMDb, because IMDb is owned by Amazon. Maybe they're using another solution, or they get this information provided to them by the content providers, in which case you're subject to whatever information the content provider chose to turn over. Maybe they're using something like the movie database, which is a it's not necessarily open source, but it's something where they can charge you to use their API or something, but it's less restrictive. And that's what, like, the Plot app guys use for the Plot app. And that's how they get even, like, images and stuff loaded in from that. And you can fire off your little requests for those things. I would just be curious how extensive the information is. Because, you know, if you, like, go in and look at some of the episode descriptions for things on... or your movie descriptions for things, like, it'll have stuff where it's pulling in things from Rotten Tomatoes and stuff like that, but it's not like it's not as extensive as like IMDb. So I'll be interested to see how that goes. And that, it's just sort of like a, I don't know, I'm optimistic but a little cautious. As for the gaming on the device, I laughed a little bit because, I mean, this is kind of what I thought they were going to do. Like,
you're not a fan? You don't play a lot of Crossy Road?
No. Well, I mean, I did for a little bit, but I mean, no. I'm not a huge game playing person anyways. So I'm kind of like looking at this from like a step removed. I never anticipated this getting me excited for playing any games, because it's Apple, and Apple kind of has never really known the strengths of gaming themselves. If you pay any attention to sort of the clumsy way that they handle all the gaming stuff they've done in the past, like when they bring up people for game demos and stuff like that, they're like, we're going to have EA here to demonstrate something for Spore. And it's just like, oh God. And it's running Cider, because everybody likes this thing that it's converting. It's just like, come on, guys. But they'll give, you know, like, stage time to those kinds of things. But that's not really sort of the game. They're terrible at predicting sort of the games that take off on the platform. As for the device itself as a game device, it's, of course, not powerful enough to actually do that. It comes with all kinds of weird limitations in regards to storage, which is still sort of vague, and we'll see how that plays out in practice, because it's a 200 megabyte maximum for the actual download from the App Store, but then once it's downloaded, it can download up to 2 gigabytes of content right away, and then it's got a little cache where it can, like, download and dump things as it goes, but it's basically keeping 2 gigabytes all the time, which is weird. I would have to see how that works in practice.
200 megabyte limit. I was just looking at the last app that just updated was Monument Valley, and that's 262 on my phone. So that's a bummer.
Well, but what would happen is it would for like something like Monument Valley, if they did a TV version of it, it would download a 200 megabyte chunk, and then it would download on the fly the rest of it once it's there. So you'd have your 200 megabytes, and then you'd have up to 2 gigabytes. Of whatever it is extra downloaded, but it could be flushed at a moment's notice if the platform needed it.
Well, that's never happened before, where you change apps and then all of your stuff gets pushed out of RAM or whatever.
Yeah, so that's a weird limit, and I will be interested to see how all of that works out. I want to see it in practice, especially some of the more extreme examples, because I can imagine it's very easy to create some simple optimized games that will even fit under the 200 megabyte limit and never need any of the additional download bandwidth. I can also see that there are games that will really max it out almost immediately and will constantly be pulling in assets. I don't know how they're all going to fare. It'll be interesting to see some of those extreme examples. In terms of the storage, though, it really raises a question in regards to the 16 gigabyte and the 32 gigabyte platform. And honestly, I think I would buy the 16 because I'm sorry, the 32 and the 64. I was thinking of the phone, which doesn't need any more space. The phone is fine. So the 32 and the 64, the 32, it seems like that is a lot of space for something where everything is sort of restricted in this manner, especially if I don't anticipate doing a lot of gaming. However, I was someone who saw gaming as something I distinctly wanted to do with the platform. Maybe I would consider the 64, but it's so weirdly vague right now in terms of like the value proposition that I don't anticipate seeing myself spending the extra $50 on that. I don't know what you're thinking on that is.
I didn't even realize there was a price tier, but I think we're just going to end up looking at them in the same way we look at the phones we buy. You know, it's if you anticipate doing a lot of different things, you know, pushing it really to its limits, you're going to want the larger one. And people who are more casual with it, who just want a box that connects to Netflix or HBO or whatever, they're going to care less. But I mean, really the big thing, this whole discussion that occurs to me is just more so than the box now, which is terrible at it, this new box is going to rely very heavily on a reliable internet connection. And I don't know about you, but my internet connection is not always the most reliable, especially in the living room, because that's not where my modem is. I know some people have a different setup, but like it's reliance on being constantly or immediately connected to the internet is going to potentially be its downfall, as far as I can tell. And that's the part that worries me. I don't anticipate doing any games on it, maybe more than like once or twice, in the same way that like the Wii was entertaining for a little while. And, you know, all of these games, like Crossy Road and, what was the Flappy Bird? All of those are interesting for a day or two. I don't anticipate those being a regular kind of thing. The entertainment apps, like the thing that this doesn't solve for me, like if they can get their database stuff down, to where you could say like, show me these movies and then this one and narrow it down to all the episodes, the one exactly you're looking for, and you can find it with Siri and all that fun junk. The thing that doesn't do for me is it still doesn't give me just like turn on the TV and find something that is interesting. Like I still like the, as you put it, when you were watching Star Trek with Jason, the serendipity of finding something on television that is entertaining to watch. And then if you so choose, you can dig in deeper and find more stuff. But like, I don't always know what I'm looking for. Like, so I don't want to have to open up this box and be staring at a blank screen and say like, well, what do I want to watch? I have no idea. And you know, when it comes to the recommendations, you know, like the For You section of Apple Music has been, pretty well illustrated in terms of the fact that they don't really have the best recommendations personalized to people yet. Like, they haven't quite figured that out. So I don't know. I mean, maybe we're just waiting for the OTT thing for that to be useful. But again, I think that's going to be still more sort of like a pick and choose what you want to see kind of stuff. Just the it just isn't how I watch TV. So it's kind of weird to me. And I fully anticipate getting one because I like my Apple TV and I wish it did more stuff. So this is one that does more stuff and it's marginally more expensive. It's not going to change the way I do stuff. I mean, I'm still probably going to have DirecTV, which really just drives me nuts because it's so expensive. My monthly DirecTV bill costs more than an Apple TV. So there's that.
Wow.
That's my take on the whole deal.
Okay. That was a lot. I think that it's really going to rely on it's hard to guess exactly what the OTT thing's going to wind up being like, because at this point, I don't know if it's going to be delivered as its own individual app. And there will be
The future of TV is apps, like they said. So I think they're going to stick with that that motto.
Well, but then here's the thing: there's the metaphor of the future of TV is apps, where every channel of content is an app, and then there's the metaphor of the future of TV as an app, where you open it and then all of the channels are there. That's where I think they're going to have their OTT service is like, here is your service. It is an app, and it opens, and it has all of these things, like TV. I don't see them delivering a bundle of different apps, but maybe they'll go that route. Maybe they'll be like, hey, download the CBS app and the blah, blah, blah app and the blah, blah, blah app, and because you subscribe to Apple, you'll have access to all of them at a reduced rate because you'll be in our bundle.
Like, yeah, but the problem with that is, as I think you're illustrating, is you can't just be in the CBS app and go like boring and hit the channel up button and then pop yourself over to the ABC app or something.
Yeah, there's one of the things that I thought was very strange about the interface, and is there is no
the fact that it looks exactly the same.
Well, yeah. I mean, the metaphor of it looks the same. It has parallax, Dan. Don't forget.
Can't forget the parallax.
Yeah, no, you can't. It illustrates depth.
Yeah, layers and stuff.
Yes, it's hugely important. But the weird thing is there's no channel guide, I guess, of what's happening in different apps, like there is with a traditional television service. So you can't be like, okay, I want to see what else is happening in another streaming app that I could open right now. Because some of these have live linear streams, and a linear stream is mostly comparable to what you experience on television. So you could, in theory, look at programming content from multiple sources and be like, oh, I would rather watch this thing that's on this other channel. There's nothing in the interface that provides anything like that. So you don't know what's happening until you open the app. And then you navigate.
Maybe the ability to picture-in-picture a couple apps side-by-side might be useful, too.
Yeah. But I'm mostly thinking of, like, most of the time when I go to change the channel, it is leave the channel that I'm currently watching up, because who knows if I'll find anything else. Mm-hmm. And then the channel guide overlays on the bottom portion of the TV, and you scroll through and you find whatever else might be there. And then you click on it, and then you go, nope, this was a mistake. And you hit last, and you go back to the thing that you were watching before, and then you resume the process. But there is no metaphor for that in this interface that does this stuff. So I am unhappy about that. And like you said, and like Doug Beal said, picture-in-picture would be great. And you can basically do that in iOS on an iPad. Maybe they'll be like, hey, you know this TV feature we put on our iPad? You know what would be great on? A TV.
TV.
So,
I mean, I don't know, man. This whole, I'm sure it's been said before, but this whole app icon interface, it doesn't work for me because, yeah, I know there's sort of symmetry with iOS, but the reason it works on iOS is because you sort of have muscle memory of like where a given app is, and your thumb just sort of instinctively moves to that position on the phone. But this is a scrolling view of apps vertically, and you're using a remote control. And maybe the swipe around sort of helps, but you can't just like instinctively reach to the upper left icon for Netflix every time. So this sort of scrolling grid view, like I never remember where any icons are on my Apple TV. I mean, I use it relatively frequently, not as frequently as I use, you know, my regular TV, but like the whole app icon interface is just, it's every time I open it up, it's like, where's that thing I was looking for? And I guess Siri kind of resolves some of that issue for us. But like, why is this screen that I'm looking at something that is just entirely useless to me?
Yeah, well, like you just said, Siri will hopefully clear up some of that, especially in terms of finding content.
I mean, they might as well just make the load screen, like the home screen, just like Siri. There's no reason to put anything else on it for me.
just have it like Quicksilver or Alfred or something. It just has like a big box, and it's just like, okay, so I'm going to start saying things, and then I'll just see words that Siri is suggesting, and I'll be like, nope. It's not that's not how you spell
Sepulveda. It should be, it's pronounced Sepulveda. It's actually, it should just be like the Siri search bar, like a Google bar or something, or they could just scroll their like newest iTunes store content up here or whatever. It's just the grid of icons. Like, you know, aside from the top left one, which I always know is movies, I don't know where anything else is.
Oh, I always know, because the top left is movies, and then down from that is Netflix. And then the rest of the interface is useless.
Somewhere in there is HBO and Showtime and Cinemax, and there's music and TV shows and something else in there somewhere.
But I don't use any of those. So,
well, okay.
They matter very little to me. With the new interface, you'll move things around to your liking, and then I'm sure it'll reset itself.
Can you move stuff around? You can't move stuff around on the current interface. You can just hide certain things.
Shoot. Now I'm blanking. I know you can hide things.
Yeah.
But
do we know for certain that we can move stuff around in the new one?
No, I don't recall seeing that demoed. But maybe it was, and I'm blanking. But
well, we have a touchscreen, so we could tap and hold on something theoretically and watch it wobble in the parallax while we move them around.
Well, I'm sure if you just, you know, hold down on it and force touch or whatever, it'll I don't know. Which brings up an interesting thing, the controller, the remote control, as it were.
infrared, Bluetooth, do we know?
Both.
Well, that's good.
It doesn't need it for the Apple TV functions, but it still has an IR blaster thing in there to change the volume and stuff on your TV. And it has CEC over the HDMI connection in order to change inputs and stuff. So there are things. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be very interesting to see how that all works, because you're sort of relying on this standard implementation of this EEC thing to see if it actually switches the inputs right and, you know, all of the other stuff and controls the volume correctly with the IR blaster, which it should. It should. You know, it's really one of those things that everybody should have down pat at this point, and fingers crossed. But the weird thing about it, I think, is just the shape and the button layout, and
of the remote. Why? Yeah. It mirrors. It's ostensibly the same shape and slightly larger than the previous one, right?
Yeah, but I also don't like that. I don't know what it is with Johnny Ive, but he likes his little rectangles. And it's just like, well, do you know how my hand is shaped? It's not rectangular.
I don't think he's ever met you.
Well, I think he can guess, because it's just like every other hand.
I don't know. He's kind of a different human being. He might be made out of like some sort of liquid metal, so he might have different shaped hands.
You remember when the T-1000 is chasing after the car and has those really long, like, stick arms?
Spikes.
Yeah, with the spikes they need to hook on to the car. He's in his white room, and like the camera pans down, and he's just got like those two hook hands that he's using them to manipulate the TV.
I bet those were actually the prototype design for the Apple TV remote. Like, you know, if Johnny Ive has metal stick hands, like he could actually turn one of his stick hands into the remote itself.
Yeah. Well, see, here's the thing. Johnny Ive is the enemy of ergonomics. He loathes ergonomics. And I'm pretty sure this is why Apple doesn't make an actual game controller for the device, is because they were like, hey, so it's got to be a game controller, you know, like the Xbox 360 or something, where you put it in your hands and you hold it there for a while. And he's like, nope, can't do it. Can't be done. It's got to be this milled piece of aluminum. And it's got all these edges on it. And it's just like, oh, but that doesn't seem comfortable, Johnny. Yeah.
They don't make things that aren't round rex, do they?
No, I mean, he used to know what a compound curve was back in the day.
Did you see that thing going around when they were talking about the Hermes watch face, saying it's like the first one that actually uses the rectangle shape of the watch? And somebody pulled out that quote of Johnny Ive saying, you know, a round interface isn't appropriate for this square thing, because they were sort of mocking how the sort of Friends interface on the phone is round, because originally it wasn't. It was sort of a grid-shaped pattern, but now the final ship version is round. And I just think he has a distaste for round-shaped things. And honestly, the round-shaped software interface makes sense. I just don't think he, like, he could stomach shipping a round watch, so they never did. And I don't think he could stomach shipping an ergonomic non-round rect remote control.
Well, the watch face is slightly different because you can display more stuff area wise on a square than a circle.
I know, but so many of the watch faces are a circle on top of this rectangle. And that's the main reason I go with this sort of minimalist one that actually doesn't use the circle, because it looks ridiculous to have the circle with all of this space around it on a rectangular watch. So I turn the circle off and I have stuff in the corner, so it kind of uses the rectangle appropriately. But there's really like one, maybe two watch faces that don't look completely stupid on a rectangle.
Fascinating.
Yes, rectangles.
Which watch face are you gonna use on our TV?
What?
Ah, it was a joke.
Hmm.
Which watch face are you going to use on your TV?
I have a fun plugin for making round recs.
Mm-hmm. That was improved on, you know.
It was improved on by some guy in Japan. He was really super nice.
Yeah.
No, he's in China. Crap. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, good job, Dan. Sound really
I don't
thankful.
Remember which company he works for. I think he works for ILM in Singapore, now that I think about it.
Okay.
His name's Erwin. Hi, Erwin. I don't think he's listening.
No. But also, anyway. I want you to look up Singapore later. But anyway.
Did I say Singapore? I meant to say Shanghai.
Okay. That's better. That's actually in China.
Oh, my God. Did I say Singapore?
Yes.
Cut that out.
You said Japan, then he's in China, and then you said Singapore.
Look, it's late. It's very warm in here.
Mm-hmm.
Continually talking about round rects.
It's not good for geography because the Earth isn't a round rect. But that would be a terrible map projection. But the thing with the stuff. Anyway,
you hate the remote, and you want to set it on fire.
I hate the remote, but also I don't see the. Much in the same way that I don't like the current remote, in that I don't find it comfortable and I don't want to have it in my hand when I'm actually doing it. When I use the TV and whatever task I am doing is finished, I throw it across the couch because I don't want it in my hand anymore. It is done.
Have you ever lost yours?
Of course, because it's a tiny little piece of aluminum.
I have never lost mine. I think I might be the only person in history.
Well, I mean, I've never permanently lost it. I still have the one that it shipped with, but it like disappears between couch cushions. It's like on underneath like a piece of paper or something. Like that doesn't really seem to happen very often with my actual. I have a Logitech Harmony that I use to control my command center.
Is it the peanut shaped one?
Yeah, the Harmony 300. It doesn't have a screen on it. It's the cheapo Harmony.
Hmm.
Yeah. Because I didn't really need a really lame screen. So it just does all the functions of a Harmony, and you can program it with that terrible Silverlight application thing. And you know what I'm talking about.
I don't really. I don't have a Harmony remote. My mom has one. I just have a DirecTV remote or an Apple TV remote.
Oh, well, try to program her sometime and use the Silverlight application thing. They made a mistake. So Harmony remote actually sits in your hand. It's ergonomic. It feels nice to hold. It has buttons. You can tell where they are when you move your thumb across without having to look down at your remote to see where everything is.
You can tell where the buttons are in the Apple remote.
Yeah, well, you can tell where the buttons are, but there are so few of them that you're mostly not using those buttons.
I guess.
Okay. So anyway, I am not won over by this for the same reason that I'm not won over by the previous one. And I'm also going to be interested to see if they're going to update the Apple Remote iOS app, because I primarily use that for the keyboard entry for things, because entering things with the D-pad on the old remote just makes me want to set up the world on fire. So,
I mean, it's a little better now that we have swipe instead of just the, you know, the four direction little clicker doodad. But yeah, the remote app is a necessity.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the remote app, as I think I've ranted about before, has all kinds of weird laggy problems. And it'll be interesting to see how well it's supported by the new device and whether or not they'll update the app to be any better than it currently is.
Well, you can just speak the name of the thing you're searching for, so you don't even need that anymore.
Yeah, because that'll always be perfect.
Unless you need to speak like a one password generated password into your Wi-Fi password there.
Yeah, well, has anyone demonstrated or seen if it does any kind of noise canceling for what it's currently playing on TV?
Oh, I certainly hope so.
Well, because I'm genuinely curious, because what if you're watching something that's loud and it has a lot of dialogue or something and you're like, do this thing, and it's just like, yes, sure, I'm going to do the thing on the TV, or whatever that sound I thought it was, and it's like, no, that's not what I said, that's what the TV said.
Well, but there's new stuff in iOS 9 for training Siri to understand your voice when you do the Hey Siri thing, so maybe there's a little bit of training involved with it, who knows, but that would be bad.
They wisely, also you shouldn't say the HS.
Oh, right, well, it didn't set my watch off, so I don't think I said it right.
Okay, good, well, that's also encouraging.
I usually put my lips about an inch away from my watch when I actually want to say that command and actually make it do something.
Oh, do you like a little foreplay? So the thing that I was going to say, it's one of those things where it's just like when I'm listening to audio on my iPhone or something like that, and all of a sudden it accidentally triggers Ahoy Telephone, as it were, even though it was a combination of words that someone said that had nothing to do with it, it doesn't realize that it was saying it on a thing that it was emitting itself. So I'm curious to see if the TV will eventually figure that out too. Like, hey, there's really loud noises that I'm making.
On the plus side, the speaker from the television is not right next to the microphone as it is on the phone, so there should be a volume difference between the Siri input and the audio coming from the television.
Well, not when I'm listening to Mad Max Fury Road full blast and I want to change the channel and watch some Care Bears or something.
Well, like, you'll be fine if you're doing Mad Max Fury Road, because there's no words in that movie.
But there's noises, loud noises.
Siri's just going to interpret your loud noises as just like bang, bloop. Kablow.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't understand that. Which, it's also going to be nice to rely on Siri for changing channels when sometimes you trigger Siri and it just spins and doesn't do anything. So...
Ahoy Siri, change a channel. Ahoy Siri, up a channel. Ahoy Siri, up a channel. That's not going to get old at all.
No. Well, you're theoretically not doing that, because you wouldn't be able to. But you would be like, you know, Ahoy Telephone, open Netflix, and then it'd be like, can't reach server. So
I also have a gizmo for making iOS spinners, so could use that.
Oh, well, I probably just record my Apple TV. But like I'm saying, like, it's one of those things where I'm still optimistic about it. I'm just mentioning some things that I'm trepidatious about.
45 minutes later. So I guess the big question with the Apple TV for you is, did you do a little happy dance and point at everyone and say, ha, I was right, and like spike a football when you found out that it did not support 4K?
Yes. On Twitter, I spiked all the footballs. I was so
vindicated.
Because it's one of those things where all the people going, it doesn't support 4K, it's got to support 4K, it needs to, and it's just like, doesn't need to, because they don't have contracts for that kind of stuff to sell that stuff on iTunes already. And if they do, then that'll be a big announcement, because then all of a sudden everything's also going to be more expensive. I would just like everyone to think about that for a second. Could you imagine an announcement where Apple comes out and says, here's your $150 box to watch TV on. It doesn't actually play TV stuff. You have to have apps. You can download season passes for things through iTunes and buy movies, and they'll be in 4K, but they're not really 4K. They're scaled up, and we'll charge you twice as much, because we have to charge at least something like that, because that's the reasons for the things with the content. Because remember,
it's actually scaled in both directions, so it's four times the cost.
Well, except I don't picture them charging you four times as much, because
I totally do.
No, well, but look at the price difference between standard definition and high definition.
I look at the price difference between like HD and 4K, like stock footage that I buy, and it is dramatically more expensive.
Oh, well, that's not the same thing. That's not a consumer facing feature, Dan. You're a professional.
Sure, it is. It's a consumer facing. Anyone can buy it anyway.
Okay. Anyway, remember when Apple initially started offering TV and movie stuff? It was in standard definition, and it was not very good. Because a lot of times you'd get stuff that was like weird aspect ratios and things. But the standard definition version they had a price for that. And then for quite a long time, they stuck with standard definition for everything. Then they rolled out HD.
720p.
Yeah, HD 720p only. And that required a price increase. And so you could either buy in SD or you could buy in HD. And so sometimes people would buy the SD on purpose to save money. And you can still buy SD if you put if you go into iTunes and you click on the little carrot menu thing and go down, there are SD options you can still go ahead and purchase.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I rent in SD when it's a movie that you've convinced me to watch that I really don't want to watch.
Wow. The truth comes out. The gauntlets are thrown.
I mean, if it's a movie that was shot like 40 years ago, like I'm not really going to get much of a benefit of watching it in HD on my laptop. So I'll just rent the standard def.
Okay. Well, I'm glad I bought The Last Starfighter for you and I bought Dune for you because the picture quality is very important for those movies, Dan.
It is pristine.
Yeah.
You can see all of the anti-aliasing edges on those spaceships or whatever.
Yeah. So beyond your treachery, let's move past that. And so there's a price difference on that. So could you imagine if they roll out a $150 box and they're like, okay, so your $4.99 rental is now going to be $8.99. You'd be like, okay, this seems like a total rip because that's a lot of money.
Or if they really wanted to sort of stimulate the industry into shipping 4K content, they would say all the other prices move down, 4K is now the same price, and suck at content creators, and they would just, you know, throw a handful of money into the fire to sort of subsidize that difference.
The Amazon model is what you're referring to.
More or less, yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've got the money at this point. They could, it would be a very Apple thing to do to say, here's a new, more expensive box, and it provides you with the opportunity of giving us even more money. But, you know, they could just, you know, make it like a dollar or two more and people would be fine with that. Or they could just push everything down and then that would make lots of people happy.
Mm. Well, they who knows what contracts they have to draw up for that. They can't even get the stuff together for the OTT stuff. But beyond the point, that's a mess. Also, there's not a huge library that the movie studios themselves have of content in UHD. So
I'm familiar. We've had a few conversations.
Yeah, and there are different kinds of ways that it is being mastered. So there's that. And there is, of course, the fact that it is a device which is not going to natively switch to a mode where it plays back in 24p, which is an interesting choice. It's going to play everything in 60p. Which is an interesting choice. And
because the interface is 60p and they don't want to switch the Hertz over the HDMI cable?
Yes.
I mean, I guess that's fine. You've got 2-3 pull down or whatever. I mean, the purists are going to be annoyed, but it's not really that big a deal as long as it handles the conversion behind the scenes. Yeah, I mean, it's not going to look as bad as like motion smoothing or anything.
Almost everyone will probably still have motion smoothing on, so it'll just be amazing.
That'd be a nice combination. Although I got to imagine the interface in this is probably ready for 4K. Like, it wouldn't be a horrible thing if the box actually output 4K, but, you know, it was still just up-resed content and a 4K interface. That would probably look nice.
Yeah, I mean, supposedly, I don't know, some AV nerds or whatever have crunched the numbers and said that it can totally do it. Who knows?
I mean, if the phone can do it, the Apple TV can do it.
Yeah, well, but the phone isn't really doing it because the phone is recording in 4K. The phone is not playing back in 4K. Different.
I mean, the point with regard to the TV is it has the bandwidth for such an image.
Yeah, and the even at that, it's so full HD. That is 1/4 of the pixels that the camera will record.
Yes.
So that is what I'm getting at when I'm saying it's not playing back the 4K. So who knows what algorithm they're using to throw away things, if they're just like we're going to keep every lower left pixel or something and just like throw away the rest. Who knows if they're bothering to anti-alias or what they're doing. So maybe the device can totally play it back in 4K in a virtual resolution and then scale it back down. But I don't know the technical details of that on the device. So maybe they can do it with the TV too. But again, content isn't there in the iTunes store. So big question mark. Also,
well, everyone's going to be shooting amazing content on their new 4K 6S. So it'll fill up pretty quickly and there'll be 4K content to spare.
But see, this is the only weird thing, though, is that in the same presentation, they have this whole thing where they talk about 4K for the phone after they introduce the TV that doesn't have it. And it's sort of like, okay, you guys know we were in the room for that. Although you were like watching on the internet for that, like in the same presentation. So doesn't that strike you as a little strange, to place the emphasis on this feature for one device and then not for another? And I believe I tweeted about this on the interwebs that, Apple doesn't have any device that has a built-in display that plays 4K UHD video resolution at 1:1 for the full display size. Like, it has the only one that's larger is the 5K iMac, and it scales up in order to fill that display. Or you can watch it windowed on the display in 4K. Which is one of the things that they demoed when they first introduced the 5K iMac, was that in Final Cut Pro 10, that they can edit 4K video and still have the interface.
You can see the full 4K frame and see the rest of the interface. Yeah.
It's, we all remember that demo. And so that's interesting that is still the only device that has anything that can do that. And yet they're introducing the ability to record in this format.
Well, what's the rumored 4K iMac? Is that a 21-inch or something?
Yeah, it's 21-inch iMac, and it'll be in 4K. But it's not 4K...
UHD?
It's not UHD resolution. It's actually larger than that. And I believe it is 1.06 times that you'd have to scale up UHD in order to fill the display.
So that'll work out well.
Yeah, it's a weird number where you just will wind up anti-aliasing some pixels, whatever. But, you know, arguably...
No, you'll end up anti-aliasing all the pixels is the problem.
The display is probably so dense, and you're probably not going to see that problem necessarily, because you're not also going to have anything that's recorded in exactly that resolution. Maybe you can render something as a test footage thing. That'd be interesting. Here's a bunch of checkerboard covered balls, and we'll just bounce them around.
Some teapots.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want a teapot. So that's just weird. The 4K thing's weird. Like, I just don't understand the emphasis for it. Like, You can say, like, oh, well, it's future-proof. And it's like, everything's future-proof, I guess, air quotes. But the curious thing about 4K, too, on the iPhone is that they also have it introduced as 4K and not UHD. They don't use UHD anywhere in the documentation that I've been able to find. I've scoured the site.
It's too confusing.
Well, not just is it too confusing, but it's also specific because it means that it has to support a certain number of things. And from everything that I've found, it doesn't support everything. It has UHD resolution, but it does not support Rec 2020. So the color gamut is the same as Rec 709 sRGB, which is basically what the iPhone currently does. So it's not exactly UHD. And there's also the whole matter of for the UHD recordings, it's also not the frame rate, like we were saying. I think it was 30 FPS, and it's not variable, so you can't shoot at less than 30 FPS. And you can't shoot at more than 30 FPS. It is 30. That is it. Done. Finito. So if you want,
that is actually all I could find in my current iPhone in iOS 9. I looked at the camera settings. It's 30 or 60.
Yeah. And this 4K setting will be only 30. But like you're saying, it'll still do the HD in 30 or 60. But that's the weird thing, is that the you're not exactly recording in sort of like a filmic, I guess, kind of a way where you can do 24 or whatever. But given the fact that it's actually better on an Apple device to play back at 30, since you'll, I guess, be evenly doubling frames rather than doing a 3:2 pull down, that's kind of better, I guess. And also, the Apple TV will play the video files that you store, your 4K video files, but it will play them in HD. So it'll know enough to do some behind the scenes footwork in order to stream an HD resolution version of it. Which is interesting, because right now all the 4K video serves to do really is to fill up as much space as possible on all your devices.
Well, the thing about the reason it shoots 4K is not because they think 4K is a new thing. I think it's just because it is technically possible and it is something they can put on their checklist. Because, you know, I don't know if you download any of the apps for doing video production, like the Filmic Pro app for doing, you know, slightly more manual control video on your phone, but it on the current, 6 has the ability to shoot up to 3K at the same data rate, 50 megabits a second. As the 6S, which we've calculated to be 50 megabits based on the file size and the 4K video and stuff. So, you know, there is additional bandwidth in there. It's kind of like hacking around the software to push the resolution up because, you know, the stills, on the iPhone are far and away, high enough resolution to be 4K or whatever. But, in terms of video, they have managed to squeeze the enough bandwidth out of the 6 to get a 3K, which it lists as 1836. P, which is not a real thing, but I think they found some more bandwidth in the 6S because it's a faster processor and they've got the new camera sensor in there, which is a little faster. So they just, you know, hey, we can do 4K now. We might as well, but you know, they're not doing anything else other than just forcing a few more pixels through at a time. They haven't bothered to go through and try and build a full UHD color space into the whole damn thing.
Yeah. Well, and the, what was it? Oh, they made a big deal about an upgrade to iMovie, so that it will support this, and you can edit your 4K streams on your iPad or on your iPhone, which I found
didn't
hilarious.
They say four simultaneous 4K videos or something?
Yeah, on the new iPad Pro or something like that. Wasn't that it?
Yeah, that's a terrible idea.
And I was just like, okay, so it's a device that can't shoot that video, it can't display that like even though the display is much larger and there are a lot of pixels, it's still not actually it's not sufficient.
It takes us back to the days of 2006 where all editing applications were tabulating how valuable they were by how many streams of HD or 4K they could play back simultaneously. Like, oh, this new version of Media Composer with this $10,000 box can play 10 streams of HD simultaneously. It's like, okay, well, when am I ever going to have 10 picture-in-picture windows up with HD content? I'm not going to do that because that's terrible. So thank you for that feature and telling me how powerful your software is, but I will kindly decline on that.
Well, I mean, and but it's just also weird in the pipeline of having to work in that way because it'll be shot on your phone, somehow transferred to your iPad, like possibly...
Camera connection kit.
Yeah, probably not.
I've done that before where shoot stuff on an iPhone and edit it on an iPad. It is incredibly difficult and very slow. And particularly the 50 megabit a second, since I can do that through that Filmic Pro app, that is, I shot some interviews recently, on my phone and I filled up the storage like every 10 minutes and had to dump it. And that took like 20 minutes and then I erased them and I put it back up on the tripod and shoot for 10 more minutes and then waste 20 minutes dumping it. It's terrible workflow, and it's just going to get much worse.
What you got to do is get a bunch of 16 gigabyte 4K shooting iPhones, and then just arrange them in an array, And then you
if
shoot.
I had multiple phones, I could use those as like magazines and have one being downloaded while another one is shooting, but I only have the one phone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Well, although I did accidentally buy 2 6S's, so maybe I could do that.
It sounds good. And then you can alternate back and forth, and it'll just be like two different camera angles, and be like, why does it keep cutting back and forth in this interview for no reason? And it'll be like, it's for the dynamism of it. And it'll be like, but sure. It seems to be exactly the same number of minutes every time that it does. It's quiet.
It's a nice symmetry of filmmaking that we like.
Yeah.
Yeah. You got anything else to say about the iPad Pro with the pencil? Are you at all intrigued by this idea of the stylus input?
I mean, I'm interested because it's the stylus of the time, but it's not.
I'm going to let you get away with that one because it was good, but good Lord.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to make sure this show is back. So the thing with that is I'm probably not actually the person for the device. I have a Wacom Intuos 3 that I bought for myself, and I use a MyTouch garbage pad or whatever at work. You know, the one where they're like, hey, everybody wants to use their fingers to paint. And it was just like, you jerks.
That's the Intuos 5 that has the touch input, the multi-touch.
I hate that one.
Where it's like real rubbery feeling around the outside.
Yeah, yeah. And it's got the little ring thing on the side. And it's just like, everything on you is not what I want to actually touch to make it do the thing. just do the pen.
I got the one in between. I got the 4. It's the hard plastic black version, but doesn't it? The 3 is the sort of like clear gray one, right?
Yeah, it had a weird plastic. I don't know. The 2, I think, is actually my ideal design, like tablet-wise, because it doesn't have all the buttons and that you accidentally push. And then the 3's pen is good, but the... so good they've kept basically the same pen. But the... thing with the Apple Pencil is that it's a nice idea in that I kind of have wanted this for a while on other iPads, but the fact that it only works on this one particular one that costs as much as the computer is a bit of a downer for me, and it doesn't necessarily seem to come equipped with the kind of suite of software tools that I would enjoy using, I suppose. That can change over time. But the stuff that I saw demoed, it was just like, okay, this feels like the same thing as like the iPhone Adobe apps, where it's just like, we're going to put a name on it, and it'll be like a name of something else we sell, and it'll have its hooks in Creative Cloud. But it's not actually going to do all of these things. And it'll mostly be maybe like an aviary photo editor or something underneath the hood. And
I liked Adobe's tech demo on the iPad Pro of these three apps interacting with each other and using the pencil and stuff. It's like, that's nice. No one is ever going to do that work on an iPad because it's terrible.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's like, maybe somebody else will come along and come up with something, but I don't see it being Adobe. Because Adobe can't bring the actual thing that people would want, which is Photoshop, because Photoshop is so bloated and ridiculous.
It is the worst app. The worst. It runs so slow on the fastest computers.
Yeah, but even on old computers, it runs glacially.
it runs glacially.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't even... It doesn't put up like a thing like, oh, hey, you know, we don't... think we're going to support your computer because it will be so slow for you. No, they're like, please give us your money and we'll just give you this thing.
should I try and open Photoshop live on the air so we can see how long it takes to open?
No, because it'll probably like chew up the audio or something.
No, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna click it right now, and I'll let you know when it's actually usable.
Oh goodness gracious.
The thing about the Apple Pencil that and now that I find useful. That's actually pretty good for it.
Well, you know, that was a really good complaint you had about how slow it is, Dan.
It was actually not terrible.
It was like 10 seconds.
So still slower than Nuke, which doesn't make any sense.
I saw some commentary about how compared to like the Cintiq or something, obviously the iPad display is better, and the Pencil is, it's more narrow, so it gets out of the way and so you can see what you're doing. And I intentionally have like the super duper fat grip on my Wacom pen because in terms of ergonomics, gripping tightly on a narrow pen for extended periods of time is actually really bad for RSI and for your wrist. So I like having the fat extended grip on my Wacom stylus, and I presume a lot of people are going to want to do that and add like a extended third party grip onto their pencil. I like the idea of the, you know, the tilt and stuff, and you know, the various options that you have with the pencil, which, you know, Wacom's been doing similar stuff for a while with the pressure and the, you know, the erasing and stuff. But yeah, you know, I would be intrigued to see if they could port some more powerful apps to the iPad Pro and try and do some stuff. Like if they could, God forgive me for saying this, if they could hack Nuke onto an iPad Pro, I would probably try and use it for a little while and see how it would go, because that would be entertaining. But as it stands now, yeah, the software is really the thing holding it back. And I think the design of the pencil, while very Apple-like and very elegant, is going to be a major pain in the wrist when used extensively.
Yes, I agree with you. It's a very expensive toy right now because it only works on one device, which is very expensive. And the design of it, I also agree, is too narrow. And it's elegant looking, but again, this is the Johnny Ive thing of form over function, where he has made his little pain tool for you. And I do quite like the big, you know, Wacom, Wacom, whatever, style pen, where you have that foamy grip on it and you have a little utility button because you'll need to second click on some things.
Oh no, I've got the button off. Like I have the grip that's so like extra wide, it's like an inch wide, that it removes the button.
Oh, I don't have that one. I just got the normal one, but it's bigger than the Apple Pen, that's for sure.
they're all bigger than the Apple Pen. Like my regular pens are bigger than the Apple Pencil.
And also there's no eraser, although, you know, 50% of the time that never works right when you turn over your Intuos Pen. But you ever have that where you turn it over to erase something and it just starts painting and you're like, what the stop?
No, I don't get that. The thing I get now is, since mine is like sort of cracked in the inside underneath the grip where it puts together, that if I push a little bit too hard, the pen will, come apart and, you know, fall into two pieces.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I've had that happen too, where I'm drawing and then all of a sudden the whole front part of it falls off and I'm just like, where how did that happen? I don't anticipate that occurring with the Apple Pen, since the only part of it that seems to come off is really the cap that covers the power. However, I do anticipate that there are going to be a lot of snapped off lightning ports in what a mess.
It's probably pretty solid. I do like the fact that while they did have to make a compromise to make the pencil, I keep wanting to call it a pen, the pencil powered, that you can get 30 minutes of use out of it by plugging it in for 15 seconds. That is actually quite impressive.
Yeah, but what if you want to actually have like a fully charged pen? Like, do you have to just keep doing that? Is that the maximum it can be charged for, or can you leave it to charge for longer than that so you can stop?
I imagine you can charge it for a little bit longer than that.
Okay. Well, I mean, do you want to just leave your iPad balanced somewhere with this pencil sticking out of it and then hope that nobody trips across it or that you don't own an animal or something that'll knock it off the table?
you'll set it down flat. It'll be fine.
Uh-huh. Just you know, casually set your giant 13-inch slab on the table with the tiny little white, whatever it is, 6 or 7 inch little pen thing sticking out of it.
Well, imagine plugging it into the little wall outlet that you use to charge your phone. So you've just got a pencil sticking straight out of the wall about 10 inches.
Well, you can't do that because it's a mail port.
That's right. It's lightning because it's not the USB.
Yeah, it's Lightning and Eve, not Lightning and Steve. But
please tell me you stole that from somewhere.
No, I just come up with it on the fly, Dan, because that's just the kind of person I am.
Then that has to be our title.
Oh dear.
I sent you a picture of my Wacom pen in the Slack.
Okay. I don't have it open.
Well, you should.
Because I just don't have that RAM. Remember how I bought that RAM?
You still haven't put it in?
No, I meant at the time. Because I went to another country.
Several.
Yes, London, France, Monaco, and Italy.
Hmm.
But the last two, we didn't get out of the car. We just drove through it.
Well, you were technically there.
Yeah, I was there in spirit, in our Peugeot. But the... what a weird car. But the... So the... That stuff, the Apple stuff, things for creative professionals. One last thing I want to say.
Does anything that we've discussed seem like a professional tool? It's all just consumer stuff.
No, it really seems like artsy college student kind of stuff. Like, hey, yeah, man, you know what'd be really cool? Like, I just want to like go into the park and like go to the coffee shop and like draw stuff, man.
Now you sound like Kyle. He's upset that a software vendor told him that an iPad is not a computer, and that's why their website doesn't work on an iPad.
Yes, I saw all 5,000 of those tweets.
I would be intrigued to actually do some real work on the iPad Pro, but until the software exists, and you know, like Nuke is never. I mean, even if the thing was fast enough, Nuke could never run on that, because how would you have a read node in on an iPad? Like, you just can't navigate a Unix hierarchy on an iPad and, you know, bring footage in and all that stuff. Like, I would be intrigued to try it out, but it's just never going to happen.
Yeah, I could only see them going, like, if the Foundry does do anything, it'd be like some horrible little Adobe thing where they're just like, hey, so here's like Nuke for iPad, and it's like
I could see them porting Colorway or something in, which is their app that just sort of lets you like modify materials
that app. When they announced it, I thought that was a joke.
It's basically like the G-Buffer stuff that Autodesk used to do in Combustion.
Yeah. That just entertains me. Speaking of terrible things, like Autodesk, they just pump out all kinds of terrible iPhone and iOS and Mac apps that you can... all the stuff that you can get on an Apple store is full of IAPs and subscription stuff, and it's just garbage. Meanwhile, all the stuff that you actually want to use is only available for commercial purchase through them. Same with Nuke, same with Adobe, same with everybody else. So all of this talk, one exception to that is that the Microsoft Office suite of things that they've introduced for the iPad does actually seem to be mostly genuinely good.
I still refuse to use Microsoft software.
Yeah, well, some of us aren't that lucky, Dan. And so
I've recently been forced to start using Google Docs, and how anyone finds anything in the Google Drive interface, I don't understand. Like, there's folders, but then they're also sorted by like most recently used, and by, you know, it's everybody's. It's not just your stuff. It's like I can't find the document I was working on prior to the current document I have open, and I have like 8 files in the thing. So it's the worst interface I've ever seen.
Well, that's because you're trying to use it like a file system instead of like a Google thing where you just search for everything.
I don't know how to search for a document that's like version 2 of the thing that I currently have open, which is version 5.
Well, you're supposed to use the software's own versioning.
No, 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 no. We're not going to do that. We're not going to get into why, because I don't want random people who are viewing a document to be able to revert to a state or to see a previous state. It's like, no, they don't need to see the work in progress of this production budget. Like, that's not how things should work.
Oh. Well, I mean, I would export for that. But whatever.
Yeah. But there's not just like a button I can click that says like throw away the old versions in this document.
Yes, there is.
Well, at least I can't find it.
Oh, well, go look after, because there are ways. But the...
I hate your Google Docs.
It's not that bad. So the thing with the stuff...
it's all very exhausting.
No, I just want to say that one thing that I find sort of distressing about all of the stuff about creativity and you know, artistry or whatever, is that they pull in these big names for these things, and they do these software demonstrations, and they don't have any first-party authority on like apps or stuff that they're releasing themselves, where they have a software package and they're just like, oh, you know, here's Logic for the iPad, here's Final Cut Pro for the iPad. Not necessarily that anyone should or want to use those, but like that would be a professional acknowledgement that that was a thing that existed. Right now you can't do that. And so it's sort of weird that they don't. But well, it's not weird. I'll take that back. They have demonstrated for the past, like, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, a complete disinterest in being the top dog in professional applications, and that they are more than happy to just sort of putter along or outright cancel things every now and then. It really isn't that surprising that this is being that they don't really have the interest in developing the stuff themselves when they can rope Adobe or Microsoft into doing demos on their stage for their own stuff. But it is somewhat disappointing because Adobe and Microsoft demonstrate things that are not very Apple-like and don't necessarily take advantage of everything.
Did you see in the keynote how the Microsoft guy accidentally clicked the wrong button in was it PowerPoint or something?
No, because I didn't watch that part because I didn't really care about the iPad Pro.
The dense interface, he accidentally hit like the wrong thing. It popped up over the graph, and he had to like close it before he could get back to what he was doing.
Yeah, was the I've only read and heard the summaries of how awkward the Adobe presentation was with the guys like adding smiles to the women.
They added face detection to an app specifically designed for retouching. So he exports a graphic of a woman's face that they're using for a background image over to that app. And then he's just got like a slider and he cranks the slider up and the mouth smiles. And then he's like, yeah, that's good. And then sends it back over.
Yeah.
I mean, that's totally a thing people do, but like the idea that you're going to boil it down into a slider in an iPad app is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. So I kind of wish that they would take more initiative on doing their own professional stuff and have their own in-house stuff front and center when they go to do these product demonstrations. So that would, in my opinion, speak more to them taking this stuff seriously. Especially if they had demonstrated something like, oh, here's the new version of, Final Cut Pro, and it handles this. It'll flawlessly import anything you shoot with 4K video from your iPhone through iCloud and do all this stuff, and you can use it on any device.
Did you just say 4K video through iCloud?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's where it's going to go, Dan. Where do you think it's going to get backed up to? It's iCloud. Where do you think your videos are going to be shared through? It's through iCloud Photo Library. It's happening.
Mm.
Oh, and remember how they moderately reduced the cost of some of their cloud solutions?
That's
another indication that they don't quite understand. Cause
actually, I reduced my storage. I was on the 500 gig, and I think I dropped down to the 200 just to save some space.
I'm on the free. I sync everything to my my physical computer, and I back
You're
it up.
You're such an old man.
I back it all up to Time Machine and everything else. I'm just not going to pay for it. I mean, it costs less now than it did before, but you know, I don't know. Maybe it'll change once I get off of Mavericks.
oh my god, you're still on Mavericks.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Dan. Because you know why? You know why, Dan?
iCloud Drive.
No. Do you know why?
You don't like the look of Yosemite.
No. Do you know why?
Because of your RAM?
No. Do you know why?
I don't know why.
Because Shake doesn't run after
right.
Mavericks.
I forgot. Sorry. Oh, you still use Shake.
Speaking of professional software.
Yeah. Well, a Nuke non-commercial exists now, so you don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I just got my maintenance bill for Nuke for this year, and holy crap. You could buy 10 copies of Shake for my yearly maintenance.
But you couldn't run them, so.
I would just make a little chair out of them. Because they come in those cardboard boxes.
Yeah, well, and they had the little transforming car thing on the back.
Yeah. That was still on the back. They started doing King Kong in some of their advertising materials for a while, too.
Mm-hmm. And Lord of the Rings. That was on their website. King Kong and Lord of the Rings, because Weta was using it.
Sure.
That was back when they had retired as much of its functionality as possible and were just slowly iterating on features and got rid of the Windows version and only had the Mac version and the Linux version and had retired, I think, the Irix version. Remember Irix?
Vaguely.
Yeah, so because they only wanted to support Linux so that they could say that Weta was using it, and So, but we did use it for Watchmen. That's why I comped in.
I just tried to look up their website, and you can tell how tired I am. I went to Google and I typed in apple shake, and now I have a bunch of pictures of apple flavored milkshakes.
Well, I mean, that is more relevant. No doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the first result is the Wikipedia for Shake the software, but everything else is just milkshakes.
Yeah.
Oh my God! You can buy apple shake on Amazon. Get out of here. New from $79.97.
It's not from Amazon. It's reseller.
It's on Amazon. It's Apple selling it through Amazon.
No, it isn't.
It says buy Apple.
No. They do that, and it just says who the vendor is.
But all right. Let's see who's actually shipping
this. Apple doesn't even have a page on their site for it anymore. You have to use the internet archive.
The Wayback Machine. One of them is from National Liquidation. That's one of the sellers. And the other one is a guy named Brad.
Okay, well, that's...
Oh, it's Brad K777, so maybe it's JXPX's brother.
Oh.
I think we've beaten this TV horse to death. What do you think?
Yep. So, in summation, I'm excited for the TV, just to have, and then complain about, because I'm
to
going
have
to.
And to hold.
I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do it, Dan. But I'm excited for it. And the other stuff, I'm not buying. And
not buying a Pad Pro or a 6S?
No.
Do we have to call it the iPro Pad?
No, why would you do that?
I was trying to come up with a KC-esque name for it.
Oh,
the Retina Pro Pad?
No.
Hmm.
Don't, Dan. This is not going well for you.
It never does.
No.